All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast, presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 40, so that'd be the Tuukka Rask and Mike Haynes episode. Today, I'm going to be joined by Michael Hurley from NBC Sports Boston. We're going to be breaking down the Super Bowl, unfortunately. And I'm also, after the interview, going to have This Week in Sports History and the 3-Minute Drill as well. I'll do some Jimmy G talking as well, perhaps even outside the Hurley interview. So it should be a great show, so I hope you enjoy it. Let's get it started. All right, so we're going to start with the Hurley interview right away. So it's a really good interview. Hope you like it. So here we go. All right, so we're going to bring Mike Hurley onto the show from CBS Boston. Mike, thanks for joining the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, what's going on?
Not much. Well, quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, what isn't going on?
So I guess we'll start with the Super Bowl on Sunday. Outside of the Malcolm Butler thing, what do you think was the biggest moment or story of the game?
I'm struggling past the Butler. Like, every time I try to write something that or talk about something that isn't Butler, it always comes back to Butler just because the defense was so bad, and it's hard to think that, you know, Butler couldn't have made one play to force one punt and change the whole game. But that wasn't what you asked. Foles threw some dimes. Foles, that touchdown to Corey Clement was a perfect pass right over Marquise Flowers, right over Devin McCourty. I guess you just got to say, you know what? You got beat by a quarterback who was throwing some nice passes. And granted, Tom Brady did all that he could. But I think ultimately the slow start kind of cost them because it took 42 points to win the game. So I think Foles, I was not completely down on Foles, but I think a lot of people are underestimating him. But even to my expectations, he exceeded them with some of those passes. So even watching the NFL film sound effects of it, they show those nice slow motions of the deep balls and the Jeffrey touchdown. The man throws a nice football, so hats off to him. He played a heck of a game, so I guess that's the biggest thing, is he probably played better than any of us ever imagined.
Yeah, I mean, he had that one really good year in 2013, but he was pretty much a bum ever since then. Mm-hmm. And, I would agree with you there. Story of the night. And it's funny because, to me, it's like, okay, they lost to the backup quarterback, so they would have lost by 30 to Carson Wentz. But then you're like, well, not really. Like, right. I don't know how Carson Wentz plays any better than Nick Foles played.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. But I also think there was a lot of times where, and this is probably a credit to Foles, in some cases he threw the ball about 45 yards out of bounds probably just to avoid a pick. But there were some passes, you know, out to the flat where he threw some wobbly ones that were outside of the reach of his receivers and stuff like that. So there were a couple of shaky throws, but altogether, yeah. If you put Carson Wentz in the cauldron that is the Super Bowl, I mean, it was so loud in there. It was so crazy. It was so fast. It felt like a basketball game almost. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think Carson Wentz was, you know, the MVP this year before he got hurt. So it is, but it is hard to say he would have done better.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get into the Butler thing. I got to tell you, I mean, I don't know if there was disciplinary stuff, but if there wasn't, I've kind of come to the conclusion that this Malcolm Butler decision might be the worst decision in the history of the NFL by a coach.
History of the NFL. I am not qualified to speak on the history of the NFL, but I will say it's got to go down as Belichick's worst, just because had he... It almost feels like they were planning out Do Your Job Part 3, where it was like, you know what, let's go with Roe on Jeffrey, let's put Jordan Richards in the game, they'll never see it coming. And it's like, yeah, they wouldn't see it coming because no one expects Jordan Richards to play in an NFL game, let alone the Super Bowl. So, yeah. Excuse me. I don't know if it's the worst ever, but it's got to be, you know, up there, considering the stage, considering what was at stake, you know. These things don't come along every year, and the fact that Brady's 40, and you never know when the last one's going to be. And if this goes down as the last one, then yeah, it's really going to have a lasting impact. I think the only way it washes away historically is if they manage to win next year, but then it becomes sort of a smaller note than a catastrophe. But it's as bad as it gets, because we know that Bill and any coach is going to, you know, be a little bit dishonest from time to time on the podium, but to tell us that Johnson Bademosi and Jordan Richards give you a better chance to win, and playing Patrick Chung out of his normal role, like all these ripple effects from it, it's just, we're not stupid. So it's a bizarre bizarre decision, and I hope we learn something more about it, because as it stands right now, it's just perplexing.
It's really bizarre, and I think, to me, the reason why I think it's the worst of all time is not just because of the decision to play Bad Mosey, which is fine, right? You know, maybe you think it's a better matchup, I don't know. But you get to a certain point where you're like, these guys can't play. They can't cover anybody. They can't tackle anybody. And so you're like, at a certain point, you just need to kind of make a decision to turn it around and say, okay, what we decided originally wasn't going to work. Now we need to change what we're doing to try to figure something out. And even if you put Butler in and he's not ready to go and he's not giving his best effort and he's clearly outmatched, well, then fine, take him out. But you got to at least try.
Right, and that's what I was disappointed in, that hour-long sound effects. I was hoping to get something, you know, Patricia saying, oh, we're getting beat here, we're getting beat there, or a player saying, where's Malcolm, or talking to Malcolm, or Malcolm on the sideline, and there was nothing. So the only thing we got was Belichick saying to Patricia, we're not getting any pressure, so why don't you send someone and see if we can get something. But I don't think pressure was the issue, because that ball was coming out pretty quick, because someone was always basically wide open, so... yeah, it was, the lack of adjustment is the weird part if it was a football decision, because it was plain as day to anyone watching. To, you know, I was sitting up on the roof basically watching from a blimp almost, and it was clear that you had a guy on the field at all times who couldn't play. And the Bad Mosey missed tackle on Aguilar, I think, was the worst play of the game, because it wasn't even like Aguilar, you know, stiff-armed him or fought through it. He just kind of stood still, and Bad Mosey slipped right off him, and it's just not an NFL play by an NFL player, and it's just, it's too bad that that had to happen, because, you know, I think if Butler plays, they win, but at least if he's in the game or comes in the game, you can at least know you put your best against their best, so that one's going to linger for a long time.
Right, I agree, and, you know, it's funny, I was talking to someone about it this weekend, I really feel like they didn't lose the game because Butler didn't play, but they would have won the game if Butler had played.
Right.
So I think
it's just, you don't need him to make, you know, five pass breaks up and breakups and an interception. You just need him to really help you get one more punt. If you force Philadelphia into one more punt, you probably win based on the way that game was playing out.
Right. I mean, even that Bad Mosey tackle, you go back to that one. That's on the first play. That's on the first drive of the second half by the Eagles. If they don't get a first down there, the Patriots have gotten the ball to start the second half, drove right down the field and scored a touchdown, and then forced a three and out. Then if the Patriots get the ball and drive down the field and score another touchdown, now the Eagles all of a sudden get the ball back down four. They've ran three plays in the second half, and they haven't gotten a first down. Now all of a sudden that doubt starts to creep into their mind, maybe. Yeah. Oh, my God, what's happening?
Well, even rewind it a little bit to the Eagles' last drive of the first half, where you have Richards trying to bump Clement. When a receiver's in his way, he can't even get to Clement.
Right.
Can't get any physicality on him. Clement just swats him away.
And he picked burns him up the right sideline. Like
55 yards. Oh, and it's just like, geez, you can't. You got the double score opportunity. You got to keep them out. And you give up 55 yards on a nothing play. It was just a wheel route where Richards couldn't have played it any worse. He got burned, but Foles underthrew Clement so bad that Richards had a chance to catch up. And yet, he still couldn't make the tackle. And it's just, it was so bad. I mean, I don't know how anyone on that team, on the coaching staff, could look at Jordan Richards as the guy who gave up the Juju Smith-Schuster 80-whatever-yard play and say, that's the guy we need in the Super Bowl to save us. It's just, it's madness.
Yeah, it's just stupid. Stupid is what it is. So, yeah. I do want to ask about one other guy. You mentioned pressure, that they got really no pressure. I think Dietrich Wise played like six snaps in the Super Bowl. I don't understand why. I mean, I don't know. I think Harrison may have had a few pressures. I thought James Harrison had a pretty good game really kind of took that left tackle and put him on roller skates into the backfield a few times. But, you know, it just seemed weird to me. Beyond James Harrison a few times, I think the only pressure they had was that fourth down play at the end of the game on the Eagles' game-winning drive. They had no pressure at all, and it just seemed like, why not put Wise in there every now and again, just try to get some pressure in the backfield?
Yeah, Flowers did get in there a little bit. Vinoy got in there a little bit. There was one play in the first half where Flowers chased down Foles, and he just got away, and Flowers looked like he was going to just go to sleep. He was miserable from it. But I would venture to guess Wise wasn't 100%. He got concussed. It looked pretty good in the AFC Championship game. He wasn't cleared until whatever day Gronkowski was, whether that was Wednesday or Thursday. So I would venture to guess he wasn't really a full go. And maybe there's some sort of aspect of not being – maybe he's that's one where you could actually make it maybe a football. Maybe it was, you know, the RPO threw him off. Maybe he didn't look good against that. He was biting on too many fakes in practice, things like that, or didn't get enough practice with it and didn't want him in there. But, yeah, that was – excuse me. That was – that could have helped. But ultimately, I mean, geez, the run defense wasn't there. The nothing was really there, and to me, I was talking to someone at halftime, and they were asking, you know, are they going to lose the game? And the reason I thought the Patriots were going to lose at halftime was because, unlike say the Falcons, where you got Matt Ryan taking five step drops and maybe can't hit his first or second read, Foles was getting that thing out. I mean, it was, you know, play fake, look up, hit. There was really no progressions, there was no panic, and when it wasn't there, he just threw it away. So it was a really good job by him to limit the opportunity in that. So you got to give credit on the other side too, because that really stood out to me. Just Foles was not really making the opportunity to get sacked.
Right. Well, I think at the end of the day, for me, what it really comes down to is that I feel like, you know, even last year in the Super Bowl, it's about making plays. Right, so Matt Ryan makes the great throw to Julio Jones, and they're in field goal range, and the Patriots probably lose the game. And then they make a stupid call on second down to throw the ball. But it doesn't matter that they make the call if Trey Flowers right. doesn't get in and make the sack. And then the right. sack forces the next play, and then Chris Long forces the holding call, so then they get pushed back and they're out of field goal range. If those two things don't happen, it doesn't matter that they call a pass on second down, because they complete the pass, or maybe they don't, but they're still in the same spot. And so it's like, you know, you can't just say, well, it was the coaching on that side, and it was, to put themselves in that position, but the Patriots still had to make the play, and they did. And this time, yeah. you know, the Falcons get the ball with the Eagles get the ball with 9 minutes left, and they do they have a 14-play, 7-minute drive where they convert.
And it could have been longer. It right. could have been 8.5 if they played it slow at the end.
Right. And they convert 2 third downs and a 4th down. And you're just yep. like, are you kidding me? Like, you can't make one play to win that yeah. game. And then the Patriots get the ball back with tons of time left and Tom Brady. And the Eagles defense makes a play and they win the game. And so yep. that, to me, is about just you didn't have anyone on that defense that could make a play outside of Stephon Gilmore. And nobody did, you know. And so I think that's what it comes down to for me. Regardless of who was on the field, you gotta make a play to win the game, and they didn't.
Well, you definitely didn't have Hightower, and that definitely showed up. Yeah. A guy like that, I mean, Hightower is, you know, an all-pro caliber linebacker, so to not have him in that moment really showed. Granted, you could piecework it throughout the season, but in a moment like that, when you needed that playmaker, you didn't have him. And another thing, and I don't want to play armchair sports writer psychologist, but there's an element of that game meaning everything to the Eagles. That game was their world and more. And the Patriots, it just couldn't have been. You know, half of the team has been to 3 and 4 years. More than half the team was there last year. It's hard to manufacture that desperation that comes with it being a rare once-in-a-lifetime moment. And, you know, it comes down to a desire play. That was just Brandon Graham telling Shaq Mason, you're not going to stop me. I'm going to get to the quarterback. And yeah, it's lousy, but I can't really fault the Patriots for not having the same level in that, you know, in the final minutes, because it was everything to Philadelphia. I mean, you've seen how they've been all postseason with the underdog stuff. Chris Long might still be talking at the postgame podium about how nobody believed in him or them or Peterson and everything. So that's a real element, and it's like, you know, you can't quantify it, and it maybe makes me sound like I'm acting like I know it's in these guys' heads, but I think it's a real factor in sports, and that's why we see games like this a lot.
Well, I think it makes sense. I really do, you know. I do think it's it was a good take.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it.
I do think it was interesting. I think it was Boston Sports on Twitter. They said something mm-hmm. like, I believe they said that not one player on the Malcolm Butler play in the Seahawks Super Bowl 3 years ago played a defensive snap for the Patriots in this year's Super Bowl.
So was McCourty not in the field?
I guess McCourty and Chung weren't on the field, I guess.
Well, they had three corners on the field. One was Browner, the other would have been Ryan. And then D-line Revis. Probably would have been...
Well, and then Revis, too.
Oh, good point. Then you got, you had Chandler Jones in there.
Well, Chandler Jones, Hightower, Alan Branch. Right, so it's like, so you look at it and you're like, holy crap, like, yeah. I mean, that's 3 years. You know, now, obviously, Branch is still on the team, but he was out. Hightower's on the team, but he was out, right? But, like, but you're still like, oh, my God. Like, that's crazy, the turnover. Anyways, but I just thought it was interesting. I'm like, not one guy from 3 years ago on, you know, on one of the biggest plays in NFL history, but...
Yeah. Well, in even last year when I was flying out there, I was doing some prep work on the way to Houston, and I was looking at the roster, 53 guys. I think 26 of them were on the Super Bowl 49 roster. So in 2 years, it basically turned over more than half the roster, and it was just like, the league is crazy. It really is. So there's definitely that element. I mean, you had new guys. I thought Cooks was prepped for a huge game. I thought he was miffed all week. He had like a hair across his tuchus. I thought he was going to come up guns a-blazing, and sure enough, he tried. It just obviously ended pretty quickly for him. And then who else you got for new guys? I mean, Dwayne Allen, I didn't think we were really going to see like a huge Dwayne Allen game. But, you know, there were enough new guys sprinkled around and guys, Kyle Van Noy in a role he had never really been in as sort of the number one linebacker. But still, I think there's an element of just it can't be completely unique if it's not completely unique to a lot of guys.
That makes sense. It does make sense. So, all right, so let's get away from the game. And we'll talk about kind of what else has been going on this week. So obviously McDaniels leaves the Colts at the altar. That's really a shame for the. I feel really bad for the Colts.
I know.
Terrible, you know.
Pour one out.
But why do you think Bill had a sudden change of heart? Because you know you'd have to assume, right, that Bill is the reason that McDaniels is coming back, right? Because it's not like they just offered him more money and he said I'll stay. It must be that Bill said, okay, I'm going to put an end date on my career in New England, and you're the one that's going to take over. Because there's no other reason why that would be the case, right?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, there's some. I mean, I think the Brady relationship is real. I think that's a pretty unique thing that McDaniels and Brady have. And I think being a part of that and maybe just the disappointment of not coming through and ending things the way you wanted to with Brady might have factored in. I do think the family thing is real, and ultimately, if there's a money upset of
my God,
so when they say they sweetened it, I'm
Wait, hold on,
I'm sure they got you know.
We lost you there.
Oh, sorry.
In the middle.
Oh, geez, it was real hot stuff too.
I'm not even sure where we lost you, but we lost you somewhere along the way. So, you were talking about like the family stuff and whatnot.
Yeah, and then there's the money. So I don't know what the difference was, but then it comes down to just a small difference between uprooting your family and going to the middle of the country or staying put and, you know, not making quite as many dollars. I think there's an equation to be done there. So I just think there's – I wonder if they won if he'd be gone. I feel like he might be.
Right. Oh, it's possible. I just look at it and say, you know, I don't know how many more opportunities at a head coaching job he'd get after doing something like that. And I know he didn't agree to anything, but he had, you know, I mean, it was pretty well known that he was going to Indy and supposedly they hired people that he wanted there. And then for him to kind of leave him at the altar like that, I think another team might look at that and say, do we really want this guy as our head coach? He might be a good coordinator, but is he going to do that to us this time? And so I don't know. I mean, that's the only concern that I have.
For the next 2 or 3 years, it'd probably be tough for him. But if he keeps leading the number one offense in the league and a team really needs to win some games in that league, they don't really care about morals or ethics or anything like that. So I think, I mean, look at Belichick leaving the Jets. And I think any team in the league over the past 15 years would have, you know, given up anything to get him. So I think it's all about winning in that league. I do think it'll probably hurt a little bit. But ultimately, I think if he's not Bill Belichick's successor, he'll find a job somewhere.
Yeah, okay. So let's just play the game and say that he will be Bill Belichick's successor. What do you think about McDaniels as a head coach?
I think if I were a team, I would much rather have McDaniels his second time around than his first time around, because I think back to the 07-08 era. Excuse me, I'm out of breath from walking up six stairs. I think, and he was just a Belichick poser, basically. He was just trying to act like Belichick and just copy everything about him, and it didn't work. People didn't respect it. He messed up the Jay Cutler situation, and it just really spiraled out of control. So I think he's probably smarter now, wiser now. He understands what works and what doesn't. I think the fact that I'm sure you watched the two Bills, a pretty huge moment in Belichick's coaching career was when Parcells sat him down and just, you know, we'll call him in the office every now and then and tell him about roster building or draft planning and things like that. So the fact that Belichick's doing that to McDaniels now, I think, says a lot about what he thinks of him and his future. And I do think Belichick wants the Patriots to succeed after him with a lot of people in place that he put there. So I'm sure some of that will be his children. And then it seems like he's tabbed McDaniels as the next guy. So yeah. No one will ever be Belichick, but I think is as high of a recommendation as you could get, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree. That makes sense. I mean, you know, I actually think it's funny you say he watched the Cutler thing, and I guess you could probably say that he did, but I actually think trading Jay Cutler is one of the better things he did, because I think Jay Cutler is just a cancer and a terrible guy, and I think he got Kyle Orton, and I believe he got at least one first-round pick for it. May have gotten multiple first-round picks. He actually traded back into the first round to get Tebow, which is probably his biggest mistake. But
that doesn't help.
You know, but I mean, yeah. So that's like, that was kind of like my positive and negative. Like, he got rid of Cutler, but he traded back into the first round to get Tebow. So, you know, it is what it is. Tebow's a winner, but not exactly a quarterback, you know?
He might have been beating Belichick to draft Tebow for all we know. So.
That's true. Yeah, you never know. It's possible. So, all right. So I'll move on to the next news of the week, and that is the Jimmy G signing. Today got 5 for $137.5 million, which is ridiculous. $27.5 million. Pretty good Thursday for Jimmy G, that's for sure. So my question to you is, do you think, now maybe you think it now, but do you think in the next 2 or 3 years that Jimmy will be a top five quarterback in the NFL?
Let me think. No, I just don't. I generally just bet against that. I think he looks good. He's confident. I like his release. He makes nice throws. There's no doubt about that. We've seen a lot of guys look good in brief moments in young, early in their careers, just not pan out. I mean, Foles was probably a good example of that until this past week, so I won't use him. But you look at a lot of guys Tebow was one that flashed and then disappeared. There's a whole bunch. I'm just blanking right now. I'm not saying Garoppolo is or isn't one of those guys, but I've seen way more people shine for a year and then sort of fall way back to the pack. And that money commitment is insane. Now, granted, San Francisco has the cap space to do it, but, man, and the guy's thrown for, 1,200 yards in his career, and he just made all that money. I mean, Matthew Stafford had to throw for 30,000 yards before he made that money. Now, granted, I wanted to give him the money. I'd rather give the money to Garoppolo than Stafford, but it's just a lot of money, man. And I think, you know, something that's been lost in the whole Garoppolo discussion is that now that he's the highest-paid player, the Patriots are fools for only getting a second, which they definitely could have gotten more, but I think people just forget that they only gave up 8 weeks of a guy that had no experience, so he wasn't getting that contract if they didn't trade him. So it's almost like, in a big way, they did right by him, which is a rare thing for the Patriots to do. So I feel like no one's really even considering that part of it, that, you know, if he finishes out the year with the Patriots, he still has 2 NFL starts and maybe 92 passes under his belt. So the fact that they let him go out there, got not really much in return, and, you know, he shined for 5 weeks. That's a difference of probably $100 million at least.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and it's funny because what I wanted them to do was just keep him and sign him to that franchise tag and then trade him. But it's interesting because I don't know how much more they would have really gotten for him.
Yeah.
A team is going to be obligated to at least pay him that contract. And then, obviously, I'm sure they'd renegotiate and stuff. But he's getting that guaranteed money. Or they're going to give him a big, a big long term extension without any experience whatsoever in the NFL, exactly. Other than, like you say, those 1.5 games. So, I mean, yes, you know, is he a great player? I do think he's a very good player. I think the Patriots made the right move in trading. The Patriots had to trade him, right? Anyone that says Maz just, you know, won't stop. They have, you know, they should have kept Jimmy G. Well, I don't know how they could have done it, like. It doesn't work that way, right? Jimmy wasn't going to sign here. The only way you could have kept him was to franchise him. And then what, are you going to franchise him for 5 years? It just doesn't make any sense. At a certain point, you got to understand that you're going to pick Tom Brady because he threw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl. Like, he was pretty good still, you know? And so you pick Brady over Jimmy G, and that's the way it goes. There's nothing you could do with it. You just live with it, you know?
All along, I think it's just been a really good problem to have, that the reason you have to trade a guy for a low price is
because you have greatest quarterback of all time playing at an MVP level. So, yes, that may be a long-term plan, but I mean, if you look at Brady and don't think he has 2 years left, you're nuts. So I think it sort of just played out in that way for the Patriots, and I think Bill maybe had his doubts about a 40-year-old quarterback, and that's why he kept him as long as he did. And it's really, you can't lose when that's the end result.
Right. Well, it's true, and I think they saw the writing on the wall, and they tried with Brissett to see if he could be the next guy, and he wasn't, so they traded him. Now they get two more years, probably, or three or four, however many years, to try to find the next guy. You know, and so, and then, you know, if that guy pans out, they can get rid of him. Or if that guy doesn't pan out, they can get rid of him and get something for him because he's a backup for the Patriots. So he's going to look decent in the in the preseason, and he played for the Patriots, so they'll get something back for him. And so, you know, just based on the recent history with Brissett and Jimmy G, people are going to be interested in the Patriots backup quarterback if it's a young guy that they're trying to mold. And so if you're not totally sold on him being the next guy, you can trade him and get something back for him, and you can kind of just keep bringing those guys in to see if you can find the next guy until eventually you do, hopefully. And then when Brady retires, you have your guy ready to go, and you can bring him in. And if Brady's here the next 4 years, like he says he wants to be, then you have some time to figure that out.
Right. It's funny, too, because everyone's like, oh, they're going to go Baker Mayfield and things like that. It's like, no, Bill Belichick is going to get some guy from, you know, the most remote college that you've never heard of, that's individual. You know, I mean, granted, Garoppolo was a draft prospect, but no one was all hyped up on Jimmy Garoppolo before the 2014 draft. So we don't know who that next guy will be, but I'm sure Belichick's burning through all sorts of tape right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's hope. Let's hope so. So, and then I guess last question for me, in the offseason, what do you think the most pressing need is for the Patriots, either through the draft or through free agency or through a trade or however they'd acquire someone for that position? What do you think the most pressing need is for them?
I think they need to address that front seven because it's you saw it, it's a problem. It's, you know, the linebacking depth is not there. Landon Roberts, I thought last year looked like a great run stuffer. He has lost that. I do not believe that anymore. I think Van Noy is okay. I don't think you're good if he's your best linebacker. Hightower's obviously coming back, but how many? He never plays 16 games. So you need some linebackers. Maybe a draft sort of like the one they got Hightower, where they got him and Jones, and right off the bat you had two impact players. I don't scout the draft as much as, you know, the draft crazies do. So I'm not exactly sure who to pick, but I would pick, you know, an end, a linebacker, you know, someone that's in the role. And I look, you know, you look back at the AFC Championship game and look at how much of a difference maker Miles Jack is, and he's in what, year two or three?
Yeah.
I think it's year two.
I think it might be three because he missed injured. His whole rookie year or something like that.
Yeah, but either way, I mean, that's a young linebacker who, I mean, the ground he made up on the Dorsett play on the flea flicker, the ground he made up on Lewis to force the fumble, and the most ridiculous play of all time to force the fumble, make the tackle, strip the ball, and then get up and probably would have scored a touchdown if the refs, you know, had seen that before in their lives. So a player, I mean, you're not going to get Miles Jack probably, but you got to start getting some playmakers because you're just too thinned out there. And you know, I think you can figure it out at corner. I think Rowe is okay as a number two, maybe. And then you trust the – McCourty is 30 now? I think he's 30.
I think that's
right.
So he's
still got a couple more years of that. He could probably play for five more years. He's a, you know, very good player. Yeah, I think Brady can make work. They got a lot of players coming back. I'm sure Amendola will come back for $50 a week or whatever he likes to sign contracts for. So to me, it's all about the front seven.
Yeah. Well, I actually agree with you on that. Although I leave the D-line out of it, I feel like between Malcolm Brown, Vincent Valentine – you know, in those D tackles, I think they're okay in the middle. And then you
get Derek Rivers coming back.
Right, you have Wise, Rivers, and Flowers on the outside.
Yeah.
I think their D-line is pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
And so to me, I think it's really all about the linebackers because, I mean, that's the biggest depth need for them. You look at it and just say, you know, you get Kyle Van Noy, you got Marquise Flowers and Eric Lee playing in the Super Bowl. Eric Lee was on Buffalo's practice squad. Like, when you're not playing in Buffalo, you know, and then you come, and you're basically starting in the Super Bowl for the Patriots, that's crazy. And so,
would have been a great story, but just came up a little short.
Would have been a hell of a story, as Julian Edelman would say. So,
yeah. But, yeah, no, you're right. I think scouting report on Derek Rivers, I saw him downstairs in the press box one game this year, and he's the biggest man I've ever seen in my life. So you look at him and you look at Wise, and you're like, all right, I can kind of see what they're doing there, what they were going for, and what they're building. So you're right, provided they can sign Flowers, I think he's a free agent after next year. That could really be a strength. So that's true. And Bill always figures out the D lineman, no matter whether it's, you know, draft picks or veterans or whoever. He's just always has a good D line. So
you're right.
It's got to go to linebackers. Which, I mean, it's easy to say they got to get good linebackers because they're pretty rare to find.
Right. That's a very scientific scouting report, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
Tell you watch a lot of film for that one. So
like Richard Seymour Jr.
I mean he was projected to start in preseason. They thought, or in training camp at least, they were like, this guy is probably going to start at the end for the Patriots. Now, that could have, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a free high draft pick you get this year if you want to look at it in a positive spin.
Right. So, yeah, could have used him this year, but that's okay. We'll take him next year. So,
yeah.
And that's similar to Trey Flowers, because Flowers, same thing. Flowers played well in preseason and in training camp his rookie year, and then got hurt and missed the whole year. They didn't win the Super Bowl his rookie year, and then he comes back and they win the Super Bowl his second year, and he makes a big play in that game. So, could be a similar story with Derek Rivers. You never know. So,
Derek Rivers, early favorite for Super Bowl 53 MVP.
There we go.
You heard it here first.
All right. Okay. Listen, if we come back to that, if Derek Rivers is MVP of the Super Bowl, like holy shit, that would be wild. So
we'll come back. We'll mark this tape.
I'll keep it on file. So, I think that's it. I think that's all I got for you. You have anything else you want to add?
Jeez. No, I mean, we covered it all. It's been a busy week.
Yeah.
It's still hard to assess that game without sticking on Butler, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out in the next 2 weeks. If there's something, if there was a fight, if there was a disagreement with the coaching, just anything to sort of explain it, because right now, that's, like I said, it's hard to really take any other angle with that game other than to say, how do you not put Butler in at some point?
Right. Like I got to tell you, you can tell the difference between a journalist and a fan, which I'm a small J journalist.
Sure.
Podcasting, and I write a few articles here and there for WTP Sports, but I have not watched 1 second of Super Bowl coverage since the game ended. I was like, I just can't do it. I can't bring myself to watch any NFL film stuff. I can't rewatch anything. Yeah. I'm like, no replay, nothing. I just can't. I watched a little bit of Jason Kelsey's speech today when he's all dressed up like a moron.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, these idiots. But,
I remember those days fondly. I mean, when the Patriots blew the 21-3 lead in Indy in 06, I was no sports center for a good week. It was no sports at all. Just sports are done. So I remember those days fondly. I think I'm better off now just sort of not feeling anything ever about anything. It's a smoother
transition. I suppose that's true. Life. So we'll just have to look forward to the Celtics and the Bruins and go from there. So
yeah, it's a good time. Well, not the Red Sox though.
That's true. Them. We'll just pretend they don't exist. So, yeah. But thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And so you're on Twitter at Michael Hurley, right?
Michael F. Hurley. You got to throw the F in there.
Michael F. Hurley. Throw the F in there. Okay, so at Michael F. Hurley on Twitter. You're on NBC Sports Boston a decent amount, right?
Yeah, I've been doing all the Mondays during football season. We'll see what's to come now.
There you go. All right, nice. So I think that's pretty much it. So thank you very much for coming on. If you don't follow Hurley on Twitter, you're an idiot, first of all, but please do. And, he's a good follower.
If you do follow me, you're an idiot too. So it's just sort of, everyone's an idiot when it follows me on Twitter. That's what it's about.
That's true. But that's all right. It's Twitter, so we don't mind.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Cool. Glad we made it happen. It took us a few weeks, but
With the little kids, it's the way it goes, you know?
Yeah. Plus the Super Bowl, so it all.
You're busy in Minnesota, so.
Crazy.
So, thanks again. We appreciate it. Okay, so that was a solid interview with Hurley. Really appreciate him coming on. As you can probably hear, he's a little bit under the weather. But he fought through, played like a champion, and we appreciate that. So, again, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And again, if you're not following him on Twitter, you should be. Good follow. He's got a lot of great insight. And, just an all-around good guy. So we appreciate him coming on. Matter of fact, he's a recurring guest. I think he's our first expert recurring guest. We've had recurring guests on before, like Artie and Dave. But he's our first expert recurring guest, so that's pretty cool. So we appreciate that, and I'm sure I'll be talking some more football with some more people, although we're moving out of football season for now. But maybe he'll be back on next year. You never know. So just want to kind of get in a few segments. Before I do that, though, I did want to talk just a little bit more about the Jimmy G thing. I thought it was interesting that he said, you know, in 2 or 3 years, he didn't see Jimmy G as a top five quarterback. I'm kind of with him on that. You know, I think Jimmy G's a good player, and he could certainly be a top five to top 10 quarterback for sure. I just don't know if he's going to get there or not. And again, I think where the Patriots were, they made the best choice that they could. I mean, what are you going to do, right? You couldn't trade Jimmy. You couldn't trade Brady. You're certainly not going to trade Brady. So did you, you know, would you want to franchise Jimmy G now and keep him? And then maybe Brady regresses next year? Or maybe he doesn't, and then do you trade him midseason? Or then you franchise him again and then try to trade him again? It's just like, at a certain point, what are you going to do? You just have to get rid of him at a certain point, and there's nothing they could do about it. His contract ran out, and Brady still wasn't done. I would imagine when Belichick drafted him, he thought this guy could be the guy that takes over for Brady. And then he wasn't. And then when he drafted Brissett last year, he probably said, okay, well, Brady has a few years left. Maybe Brissett will be the guy when Brady's done. Brissett wasn't the guy either. So now, Jimmy G probably could have been the guy if Brady was done now, but Brady's just not done now yet. And I think Brissett wasn't going to be the guy, and they realized that, and so that's why they traded him during the offseason. And so, you know, I think, again, and not to beat a dead horse here, but they go back, just going back to it, they traded him midseason because Bill was trying to get him to stay here. He wanted him to stay here. Okay, and so, you know, you listen to some of the guys on radio, specifically Felger and Maz, and they will tell you that there was, you know, something came down from the Crafts that said you have to trade Jimmy G. I don't think that's what happened. I think maybe what came down from the Crafts was, you know, we really don't want you to trade Tom Brady. You probably shouldn't trade Tom Brady. And I think kind of everyone can get on that train. He threw for 505 yards in the Super Bowl. He played really well. Now, he didn't play fantastic at the beginning of the game. He made some mistakes in that first half. And could he have made a better play on the strip sack? Probably. If he gets the ball out right away, the ball didn't get knocked away, and they probably end up winning the game, I guess. But, I mean, now, this is, by the way, 7 Super Bowls that Tom Brady has led a drive in the fourth quarter to either take the lead or break a tie. 7. Okay? Now, last year, I guess, technically, in the fourth quarter, he led a drive to tie the game and then led an overtime game-winning drive. But nevertheless, 7 times he's led a fourth quarter drive that's either broken a tie or taken the lead. In 07 and this past year, they lost, obviously. But in all 5 of the other Super Bowls, he's led a fourth quarter drive to either take the lead or break a tie. And so you have to look at it and say, what else do you want the guy to do? I mean, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. He's the greatest playoff quarterback of all time. He's the greatest Super Bowl quarterback of all time. Give me the Montana 4-0, 11-0, great. I don't care. Did Joe Montana lead 4 game-winning drives in the Super Bowl? No, he didn't, okay? He did in one of them. He did not in all 4, okay? Yes, he had an unbelievable game, I think, against the Broncos, and they scored like 77. Well, they didn't really score 77 points. I'm, you know, a little bit hyperbole here. But, you know, the point is that, yeah, they put up a ton of points on the Broncos. Yes, he had the drive, right? And I'm not taking anything away from Joe Montana. All I'm saying is that you look at Tom Brady's body of work, and how you can't put him as number one all time is beyond me. It's beyond me, okay? They were out of that game the entire time, and he takes the lead in the fourth quarter with 9 minutes left to go for the first time all year, for the first time the entire game. And by the way, for that Eagles drive until they scored and took the lead back, that's the only time in the last 2 Super Bowls the Patriots ever had the lead. Think about that for a second, because the Patriots never technically led in the Falcons game ever. And they didn't lead the entire Eagles game until they broke the tie, until they scored and went up 33-32. and then obviously ended up losing that game. But that's not on Brady. That's 100% on the defense. And yes, Brady could have made some decisions in the first half. Some of the offensive players could have done different things in the first half. But man, if the defense makes one more stop, just one more stop, they win the game. And so again, you really can't blame Brady for that. That's not on him. So that's my two cents on it. So with that being said, let's get into some of our segments here, our two segments. Again, we have the three-minute drill, and we have This Week in Sports History. I'm going to start with the three-minute drill. So let's get it going. So the Cavs today at the trade deadline traded basically their entire team, okay? And so I'm gonna just run down the list just so you can hear it. It's so preposterous that it's amazing, okay? They traded Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, Derrick Rose, Jay Crowder, Channing Frye, Iman Shumpert, and their first-round pick this year. This is just ridiculous. And they got back Rodney Hood, George Hill, Jordan Clarkson, and Larry Nance Jr. And so I think they're, you know, I mean, it's a decent return for them, but they traded like their entire team away, which is just insane. And so look, are they better today than they were yesterday? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I guess they're better defensively. Maybe the environment was so toxic, right? I think the GM said they were on a slow death march. And so, you know, that gives you the feeling of what they felt when they were in there. But I don't know. I mean, I guess now the third best player is Rodney Hood. And, you know, or maybe George Hill, I guess. I don't know. I mean, but are either of those guys better than Kyrie? No. Are either of those guys better than Isaiah Thomas was last year? That's really the question. Because the big thing was, if IT could do what he did for the Celtics last year, that was going to be the way that the Cavs were going to compete with anybody else. I honestly don't think so. I mean, Isaiah Thomas last year, everyone was saying he's a top 20 player. I don't know if Rodney Hood or George Hill are top 20 players at this point. I don't think that they are. Larry Nance Jr., good player. Jordan Clarkson, good player, but you know, not enough, I don't think. I still think the Celtics are better than the Lakers. But again, shoot, in a seven-game series, you have LeBron James. So anything could happen because you have LeBron James. And so that's the way it goes. As long as they have LeBron, you just have to kind of look at it and say, well, it's LeBron, so they could technically win. You don't know. So I just think that's interesting. I do think on the IT part of it, it's pretty funny. First of all, I guess we're having no IT tribute. That's too bad. The Lakers don't come to Boston, so they can't do it. But what's interesting about the IT thing is he actually has a chance to stick it to the Celtics this year, even more so than he did with the Cavs. I mean, maybe the Cavs would have beat them in the playoffs and he would have been a part of that. But think about it this way. If he can lead the Lakers to win some games, he can get them out of that 2-5 range, and the Celtics will lose that draft pick. Imagine that. That IT will be able to, there's my timer goes off. IT will say, hey, you didn't get that draft pick because of me. Screw you. And that would be a big middle finger to the Celtics. So kind of interesting storyline to look at moving forward. So that would be interesting. And so so let's move on to This Week in Sports History. Again, I have two from today, and we'll go in chronological order because that's the way I like to go. And so first up, Bill Russell, February 8th, 1960, Bill Russell sets an NBA record with 51 rebounds in a game, which is just stupid. Okay, he sets the record for 51 rebounds. And then later on in the year in November, actually, Wilt Chamberlain broke that record. He actually got 55 rebounds against the Celtics, against Bill Russell and the Celtics, which is crazy. But, of course, the Celtics won the game in which Chamberlain got 55 rebounds because why wouldn't they, of course? But it was just kind of funny. He was the first guy to ever break 50 rebounds, and, of course, it was 51. So pretty crazy numbers. I mean, imagine someone getting 50 rebounds in a game. It's just unbelievable. So, anyways, that was February 8th, 1960. And then February 8th, 1986, Spud Webb beats teammate Dominique Wilkins in the slam dunk contest. Now, of course, Spud was only 5'7". I believe he was a rookie in 86. And, you know, two teammates, and I think that the slam dunk contest was held in Texas, and Spud Webb was from the Texas area, and so, like, the crowd was going nuts for Spud because he's a home guy, hometown guy, and it was pretty awesome. He had, I think his final dunk was, you know, bounced out the glass, caught it, and threw it down, but he had, like, a 360 dunk. He had a few double pump ones, or double clutch ones. He had one kind of backwards double clutch. And really, I think for him, more than anything else, I think, you know, NBA player, he was fine, but that's really kind of become his legacy, is that he was this really short guy who could dunk. And so you've seen him referenced a lot in the slam dunk contest. Nate Robinson, who former Celtic, actually, who won the slam dunk contest, I think, twice, jumped over him while wearing a Spud Webb jersey, I'm pretty sure. So, of course, I think Robinson towered over him at 5'9". But even still, you know, he's definitely become kind of synonymous with the slam dunk contest. And it's like, oh my God, here's this little guy who can play. And, you know, the guys come in, oh, hey, it looks like Spud Webb and this and that, you know, Muggsy Bogues and all those other guys. And so, you know, that's kind of a name that people remember. And that was February 8th, 1986. And so I think that does it for our show today. As always, want to thank MDOT and Core for the outro music. It's at MDOT Boston on Twitter and Instagram. And then his newest album, Ego and the Enemy, is on iTunes, so check that one out. And then Core is at Core of EMS. It's K-O-R-E of EMS. And we are, or I am, at Weekend War Pod on Instagram, Twitter. Yeah, Instagram and Twitter. And it's Weekend War Pod with no E's. So it's WKNDWARPOD. Okay, so Weekend War Pod, no E's. On Facebook, I am Weekend Warrior Podcast. So you can look the show up there. You can follow us on all those things. We'd really appreciate it. So that pretty much does it. Thanks for coming along. Really appreciate it. And we will see you next week. Moving away from football all of a sudden. Now all of a sudden it's not going to be football season anymore. We're going to be moving into some Celtics and Bruins talk. Maybe even some Red Sox talk, because they're starting spring training soon. And so we'll...